Oh, we've got a couple hours of open lines now. There's nothing like it, Friday night into Saturday morning, so let's do it. You know, last hour I was talking about how I distinctly remember seeing the chair that Abraham Lincoln was in at the Ford Theater when he was assassinated. And I've been all over the place when I was a youngster. My parents would take me to various cities. We had relatives in Washington, D.C., and I distinctly remember seeing the chair. But I thought I saw it at the Smithsonian Institute. I did not. The great radio talent from Los Angeles, Shotgun Tom Kelly, just called Tom and said, no. George was a little guy when he saw it. It was at the Henry Ford Museum in Dearborn, Michigan, where it still is. They restored it back in 1999, but it's been there a long, long time, apparently. The blood stains were found on the chair and everything else. But that's probably where I saw it as a little boy growing up in the Dearborn, Detroit area. And so thanks, Shotgun. I appreciate that. I always thought it was at the Smithsonian. How did Henry Ford's museum end up with it? But that's where it is in Dearborn, Michigan. Some other things, too. I think on my next trip back to St. Louis, because I'm headed for Los Angeles in another week, when I come back here, let's see, what will the date be? Sometime in June, because we've got that June 18th live stage show event, I'm going to try to head out to Zombie Road. It's way out west. It's in Wildwood, which is about 20 miles from where the cave is. But I'm going to go out there because a lot of haunted, strange ghosts are supposed to be all over the place. The problem is, if you get there after hours, police will ticket you. Which is weird. But if there's anybody from the St. Louis area that has been out to Zombie Road, check in with us on our open lines as well. So we'll get to your calls. Let's have some great fun. Let's have some great stories next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you. Don't forget, we will take your text questions, too, if you can't get through on the telephone. Let's go to Joe in the Bronx to get things started. Joseph.
How are you doing, George?
Good.
Hi. Last time I spoke to you, you were asking me what was happening with my life. I'm currently working on a novel. Well, it actually incorporates some facts. And the Godfather 2, they refer to the Rosado brothers. Those were my uncles.
Oh, really?
Yes, that's right. And the prop of the horse's head was procured by my uncle Phil.
He
was a Hollywood prop master, yes. It's a real horse's head. They use corn syrup, water, blood. So that's basically, just basically starting the book. But, yeah, I wanted to ask you, though, on your origins. I know you started in radio where, in Detroit?
In Detroit. I started actually in television as a production assistant. In 1969, I was 19 years old at WXYZ Television. And then 21, I got my first radio job in Detroit, and then just slowly went up the ladder.
Right. And Coast to Coast recruited you based on, what criteria? Were there a lot of other people interviewing for this position?
Well, I Art had come and gone. And they finally hired Mike Siegel to replace Art on a regular full-time basis. Mike was filling in for us on our St. Louis station that I was on. He was based out of Seattle, but we would use broadcast lines. And he would be one of our hosts whenever we needed him. Well, when he got that Coast to Coast job, which is the ideal job for people who are into what we're into, I called him up and congratulated him and everything else, and we knew each other very well. And I said, Mike, if you ever need somebody to back you up, let me know. And he said, sure, we'll do. Well, I never had that opportunity to back up Mike Siegel, and he was on for about a year, and then he was gone, and Art came back. But Mike had mentioned me to Alan Corbett, who was running Coast to Coast at the time, and he was the guy who truly developed it. And he called me up one day and he said, look, I understand. I've been hearing great things about you. I was the Nighthawk in St. Louis. But I did the same kind of stuff that Coast to Coast did, and many of the same guests. And Corbett said, I'm hearing a lot of stuff about you. Get me a tape. And so we got him a tape. He called me back in about a week, and he said, I got a fellow by the name of Ian Punnett who does Sundays. Mm-hmm. He's taking a day off. I'd love for you to do the show. And I said, done. And that's how it started. So in April of 2001, I filled in and did my first Coast to Coast show. As you know, I started, Joe, full-time in January of 2003.
Right.
In between, I was filling in for Art quite a bit. And then as his situation changed, whether his health issue or whatever was going on in his life, he kept downplaying his role, and I kept picking up more shifts while I was still doing my St. Louis talk show. And people would say, how do you do this? I mean, you're on the air for 10 hours a night, you know, your local show and this show. And I said, I have to do this. You know, it's an opportunity of a lifetime. I have to do this. And I never turned them down. Corbett would call and say, sometimes he would call. I'd be on the in the Midwest. Coast to Coast started at midnight. Sometimes, and that's when I got off the air with my local Nighthawk show. Sometimes he would call, I swear to God, at 11:45 and say, I think Art's not going to be on tonight. Can you do the show? And I went, whoa. See, but I was always astute enough, Joe, to prepare for Coast to Coast earlier in the day in case I got that call for that night. So I knew who the guest was. I studied it. I had all the material ready. And so when he would call and talk to my producer, at 11:45 p.m., and Coast started in 15 minutes, just when I got off the air on my local show, I was ready to go. And, you know, I would wave to Howard Morton, who was my producer, and I'd say, yeah, thumbs up, I'll do the show. So as soon as my Nighthawk show ended in St. Louis, I'd run down the hallway where we were hooked up with Coast to Coast, and I'd start doing that show. It was unbelievable. Sometimes I even had their board op, who was doing Coast to Coast, would say, when you hear the theme song, if you don't hear Art's voice, you're on. And I said, what? And he said, yes. If you don't hear his voice, you're on. And that's here I am.
Well, it really kept you on your toes.
It did.
Thanks, George. I really appreciate it.
All right, Joe. There's my story. Let's go to Leanne in Jasper, Alabama. Hi, Leanne. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, George. Well, I have got one more creepy story for you.
I love it. Fire away.
And it has to do with a preacher.
Okay.
Well, okay. About 3 years ago, when my husband and I were living in our other house, I have COPD, so from time to time, I have to be on home oxygen.
Sure. Did you smoke a lot?
Yeah. And so, you know, every once in a while, I have to do the home oxygen thing. And the guy that would come out and bring my tanks, well, he liked to talk about the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're not churchgoers or anything, but, you know, we found it real interesting. And he came out a few times when he'd bring my tanks, and he was about to move back to Texas. So he had asked us, would it be okay if he brought his preacher over with him, to have a few Bible studies.
Mm-hmm.
So we're like, sure, you know, no problem. Well, the first time the preacher came out, the oxygen guy was with him, and we didn't notice anything weird. You know, the preacher sounded like a really nice guy. So oxygen technician moved back to Texas, and this preacher came by himself. And the very first night after he left, well, my husband and I went to bed. Now, take in mind, this never bothered me. I could go to sleep, and I'd sleep right through it. I didn't notice anything weird at all. But my husband would just be tormented. He would wake up during the night, and he would see these evil-looking witches, as he could describe.
But you didn't see them?
No, no.
All right.
I did not see them. They didn't bother me. I slept right through the whole thing. And but my husband would see them, and they would be like these witches, and they were floating in the air. And they scared the bejesus out of him. Well, you know, we had always thought our house was a little bit spooky anyway.
Yeah, so, it's just added to it.
Yeah, he didn't really put two and two together at first. So the second time the preacher came, same thing happened. I went to bed. They didn't bother me. You know, my husband saw these creepy-looking things floating in the air. And so the third time the preacher came, my husband was in a dead sleep, and now when he was younger, you know, he used to get in a lot of fights and everything, so he knows what it feels like when somebody punches you real hard in the side. Well, he was in a dead sleep, and all of a sudden, he felt something just punch him just as hard as it could in his side.
And it wasn't you.
No, it wasn't me, and I'm lucky that he didn't hit me, because he woke up swinging because, you know, he thought somebody was in the house. And so he was like, this is weird. You know, every time this preacher comes, all this creepy stuff starts happening in the house.
They're attached to him.
Yeah. And so he went next door to our next door neighbors who were, you know, very religious people, and it just so happened that their preacher was at their house the day my husband went over there to talk to him, and he said, you know, this preacher's been coming to our house to do Bible studies, and every time he leaves that night, you know, all this weird, creepy stuff starts happening, you know, I'm seeing witches.
Are you sure he was a preacher?
Well, I hope that's what he was. You know, he appeared to be.
Mm-hmm. Maybe he wasn't.
And so our neighbors and their preacher said, well, you know, the next time he calls wanting to come over, just tell him, you know, that you're not interested anymore and that you don't want him coming back.
Oh, so you said that to him? He's going to hex you.
Yeah, and so sure enough, he called a few days later wanting to come back, and my husband was like, uh-uh. And he even told him, he said, you know, every time you come over here, weird things start happening at night.
Did the preacher acknowledge that?
Yeah, I mean, he, you know, he didn't argue with him.
But, I mean, was he aware that these demons would somehow follow him around?
Well, I don't know that he, you know, I don't know that he knew that they were, or if he did know, you know, he wasn't telling us.
Well, I got to tell you, it was very wise not to bring him back, because I'm sure everything just slowed down right after that. Wow, look at the time. It's clicking by. Tom, you've got a text message for us back in L.A.?
We do, but I wanted to ask you something first. Do you remember about a month ago a trucker had called in about a dog he found?
The dog named Vernon.
Yes.
That was the dog that had its front paw shot off?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, after he called in, I called up there and I spoke to Amber at the Barstow Humane Society.
In California.
On March 5th, they were called out. There was a puppy that was shot and left for dead. He was shot in the paws. One paw has been severed. The pellets have traveled near his spine. So he was found by this Good Samaritan, which is the gentleman that called the show. He was rushed to a vet. They cleaned him up. A Dr. Paul had stabilized him. So now they're kind of figuring out the best course of action for the dog. He's so cute. And the reason I'm telling you this is because we want to do a little fundraiser for him.
Yes, we do.
So, and I know you've seen this on the Coast to Coast AM website. We have the link up, and maybe folks can kind of help out the little
guy. They're going to give little Vernon, the little puppy, an artificial paw, right?
Yes, that's what they think has to happen. They're still trying to figure out the whole course of action. But what's so great about them is they're going to collect the money that folks donate. They're going to fix up Vernon, and then anything excess, they're going to actually let people know where the money goes, what animals it's used on.
Well, that's they're a great humane society there.
Yes.
And so for folks, go to our coasttocoastam.com website. It's right down there by the bottom. Click that, and it'll take you straight to the page where you can make a little donation, just a few bucks, to help little Vernon the puppy and get him an artificial paw, which is amazing all by itself. And let's just track that, Tom. I know that their goal was to raise $7,000 total, and they're $87 away from that. But if they get much more, that's fine too, right?
Yeah, that's what they started with, but they're really not sure what the whole thing's going to cost because now they've found the shrapnel, you know.
Now, who's going to keep the puppy?
Well,
we know that?
We don't know that yet. I know the gentleman that called in was interested, but they're not sure because there's a lot of things that go with this. The dog's going to have a lot of psychological stuff, you know, and learning to walk and things and in rooms and maybe other animals.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
It's like a little person.
Oh, very much so.
Jeez. Okay. Well,
so they're not.
Let's
quite
do it, folks. Donate just a few bucks. That's all. But if everybody did it,
oh,
we could probably fix the Boston Humane Society too.
It'll help the little guy.
All right. And what do we have text wise?
So we have Janice in Cleveland, and she texts in. She says, "I've been dreaming the same dream for months now, where I think I'm in medieval times. I'm wondering, do you think this could be a sign of past lives that I've had?"
It could be, absolutely. Or you watched a television show. Or you had some bad pizza. You never know. It could be all of the above. But let's assume for a moment it is a reflection of a past life. You know, some of this is bleeding into your dream state. And you're getting some recollections of things that you did. Could be just a dream. But something's going on.
Amazing what we retain.
It really is. Have you ever been regressed? I have not.
No.
I have not. I remember when I first came to Coast, there was some strange scientist who did an eye flutter thing with me where it kind of makes your eyes flutter.
Mm-hmm.
And he claims it took me back in the time. I went to Roswell, New Mexico, and I think I was in a nunnery with nuns, and they were pointing at an object in the sky. It was really weird.
That is weird.
Yeah. I mean, why would those things happen to me like that? Okay, thanks, Tom.
Okay, thanks.
All right, we're going to take a break pretty soon, and then we're going to come back with more open lines tonight. But some logistics here. Make sure you like us on Facebook. Going for a world record on numbers there. And follow us on Twitter, where we send you all kinds of information. And don't forget, if you want to help out the little Vernon puppy, you can go to coasttocoastam.com. All the information is down there toward the bottom. You can click that link. We'll be back with more. Okay, we are back with open lines. Let's go to Nick in New Jersey, truck driving. Nick, thanks for calling. You're on the air with me. Go ahead, Nick.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, I got a quick little story. So about like 7 years ago, I was with a group of friends at my mom's place in the basement, and the pipes were, they were wrapped with like a newspaper, and you know, I was like, what the heck? And so I happened to rip a tab off, and I threw it on the ground, and my buddy picked it up and looked at it, and it was the corner of the paper, you know, they have the date and the month and everything.
Yeah.
And it was that month and date in the 40s, that same month and date, you know, but, you know, back in the 40s. It was pretty cool, and a girl that was with us, she actually kept the tab. She still has it today, and we actually have two beautiful kids together now, and you know,
how cool is that?
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I love
it. Not anything paranormal or anything, but
Wow, that's a great lifestyle story. Hey, thanks, Nick, for sharing that with us. I would guess that they probably wrap those pipes with the newspapers as like an insulation in those days. You know, if it got cold, and in the New Jersey area, it gets really cold. You want to keep those pipes warm, and they probably didn't have heating elements like they do today, or the electrical tape where you can keep the pipes warm. So newspapers, that's what they did. But that's ironic. 1940. Wow. 76 years ago. Long time. Let's go to Victor. No, let's go to Kim first. Truck driving in Florida. Hi, Kim. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
So where are you going? Where are you headed?
Well, I have a few stops. Ormond Beach, Florida, Daytona.
All right. Well, you be careful and get a little closer to your microphone if you can.
Okay. Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah, sounds like, is your window open?
No, it's not. It's just the truck's noisy.
Oh, it is a noisy truck. Wow.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Go ahead.
But first of all, on behalf of all of us truck drivers, I want to thank you very much. You're very much appreciated. Your show is awesome, and it just makes our night.
Well, thank you, because you folks are out there, and you have some great stories for us.
Yes, and the guest that you had on last night, I don't remember her name, but I had a dream about a tsunami in the state of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And I woke up upset, shaken, and I remember in the dream, I mean, it covered the whole state. I don't want to cause any fear to anybody, because actually, personally, I don't have the spirit of fear, but from this dream, I was really shaken. And I remember telling my daughter in a dream to get something that floats, you know, hurry up and get something that floats. And she got a Coleman cooler and put my grandkids in, and she was trying to balance it on the water. I mean, water, and it was everywhere, everywhere. So the lady that was speaking last night, she was saying that they were doing something off the coast of Africa, and which was causing tsunamis. So I wanted to check out one of those future maps of the United States just to see if Florida is still in existence. I haven't seen one yet, but I believe what she was saying when she said that. But I might get cut off because I'm going over the Buckman Bridge here in Florida.
Okay, sure. And her name was Elizabeth Joyce, if you want more information on her on our website.
Yeah, she was awesome. But my last statement is, do you think these tunnels that they're building, these towns underneath, do you think they're earthquake-proof? And I'll take my answer off the air.
No, I don't think they're earthquake-proof at all. I think they're trying to solidify them and make them as strong as they can. But when an earthquake rips through, it's going to be pretty darn big. And look what's happening to Japan right now. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of aftershocks after a couple big earthquakes, at least 29 people dead. That's going to go way up. That's going to go up. Japan gets hit with earthquakes. Man, that's not a great place to be right now, is it? Let's go to Tom. You got another text for us?
Sure do. This one's from Jordan in Seattle. This simply says, what's the scariest place you've ever been?
The scariest place I've ever been.
That's all he writes. Texts.
Sitting in the car with you driving.
I don't think he asked for a joke.
Okay. I thought it was kind of funny. You know what? I don't know where the scariest place I've ever been. When we went to that penitentiary in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
In Philadelphia. That wasn't too scary.
It was more interesting.
It was interesting. I loved being in Al Capone's cell. Wasn't that cool?
That was very cool. Now, what I thought was kind of scary was that weird seance we went to.
That wasn't scary. It was strange.
But I don't like being pitch dark.
It was pitch dark. You couldn't see a thing.
Nothing. That's kind of scary.
Could you sense a physical person there, though? Or did you think it was like a spirit?
I thought it was physical.
You did?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you were crammed next to people, so the person's leg is against you. That doesn't help, but that whole spirit thing wasn't, the vibe just wasn't there for me.
But it was interesting. Hey, folks, if you've never been to a seance, you're missing something. They're really cool to at least go to. Let's go to Victor now, truck driving in Sacramento. Hey, Victor, welcome to the program.
Hi. How are you?
Good. I hope you are, too.
Okay. I am. I'm well. George, 30 years ago, I was a deputy sheriff in a very rural part of the country, and the 911 system was relatively new, just breaking through and, you know, working out the bugs. And I was working a graveyard shift, use the pun, and we received a 911 call through dispatch, and they told me whereabouts the call was coming from, but they couldn't pinpoint it, and there was no voice on the other end.
Hmm.
So I went out, and I drove around the area, couldn't see anything. The next night, the identical same thing. The 911 phone call, different time, but same area, no voice. So we called up the local telephone company. At that time, it was called Pioneer Telephone, and gave them the information from it. They sent a worker out, followed the line, and the line went down in a very old cemetery on the eastern part of the county. And the cemetery was from the early 1800s to the present time. And back, you know, through so many years of fires, the older tombstones had wood headstones, and the newer ones actually had granite. So they were marked. But the cemetery itself did not have a listing of, you know, the early 1800s, actually. So they didn't know where the grave sites were.
And most of them were probably falling apart and everything else, huh?
Exactly. But the phone company said that the down line was right in the middle of an area where they believed graves were. And I was off work the next 4 days. I wanted to do a follow-up. They gave it to detectives. I don't know where it finally ended up, but it was just I'm not a ghost person at all, but that just one made my skin crawl, trying to figure out, okay, did this person die of a homicide? Did this person die of strange causes? Or did this person want a headstone back to be recognized? Kind of weird.
It is strange. That's a great story.
Yeah.
Great story. Do you miss being a police officer?
I was 30 years ago, deputy sheriff.
Do you miss it?
You know, not at all. You couldn't hang a badge on me today for any amount of money. You have no idea. Back 30 years ago, you could be a real cop. You could spank a kid. There was times when we found kids doing things wrong. We didn't send them to jail. We called their parents.
That's right.
And their parents came out and whipped the daylights out of them right in front of us.
Or you drove them to the parents.
Oh,
In a squad car. Yeah.
I remember a call that there was a large party, and there was 30 kids drinking beer. I had every single one of them go down to the sheriff's office, and I had their parents come pick them up.
Oh.
And, I mean, those are the days.
That's worse than going to jail.
Yeah, absolutely. And those were the days you could be a cop, you could make an impression, you could be a good guy and a bad guy.
When I was a kid, I did not want to disappoint my parents. I did not want to let them down. So, I really never got into trouble. I didn't do anything. I didn't do drugs. You know, I just worked, went to school, and did my thing. Played a lot of sports. But, you know, the thought of me doing something stupid and having my dad ticked off or something like that, man, I just couldn't handle that. Let's go next to Carlos in Carson, California. Hey, Carlos, thank you for holding.
Yes, George. Well, listen, after listening to all these candidates, none of them impressed me except for Bernie Sanders. I like some of the things he says. For instance, he denounces Wall Street, which none of the other candidates do. And that's, you know, that's pretty important, not to be influenced by Wall Street and its money. But on top of that, he says he's going to reinstall the Glass-Steagall Act. And the Glass-Steagall Act was a piece of legislation that would have prevented the last economic collapse. Of course, it was taken out during the Clinton administration. It was repealed, the piece of legislation, which had been set in motion by Franklin Delano Roosevelt to prevent another 1929 depression. And of course, you had people like Larry Summers, who served under Obama as an advisor to Obama. You have Rubin from the Goldman Sachs.
Mm-hmm.
And you had Phil Gramm also was instrumental in repealing it. Now, Phil Gramm now is going to be Ted Cruz, his economic advisor. And this is the guy that repealed that crucial piece of legislation, and we wouldn't have had. Now, Bernie Sanders says he's going to reinstall it because he foresees another economic collapse coming around the corner, because they're still, the banks are still doing the same thing they were doing with all these derivatives.
Oh, it's worse.
Right. It's worse. There's a lot more money. And Bernie Sanders oversees that. He wants to reinstall it. I think that's a very good idea. But on top of that, I like his stance on with his empathy for the Palestinians, which leads me to believe that he's not controlled by Israel. Therefore, he's not going to push all these Middle Eastern wars, which serve the interests of Israel. We're not going to get into a third world war, which is what Hillary's going to push us into, because she is an agent for the state of Israel.
Well, let me tell you, though, about Israel, because, you know, me being Middle Eastern, I understand what's going on there probably better than most politicians. Israel is not opposed to the Palestinians. I mean, the Palestinians and Israelis lived together in peace and harmony for years. The mistake that was made was that in 1948, when they took what was called Palestine and formed Israel again, as predicted in the Bible, they should have done something for the Palestinians, and they did not. There was a war. There was an Arab war against Israel right after that, and the Israelis fought them back, and then the next war, of course, was in 67. But the problem is the Israelis don't want to carve out a Palestinian state because of Hamas and Hezbollah, those organizations. And unfortunately, as long as those organizations continue, there's not going to be any peace out there in the Middle East between Israel and the Palestinians. And it's unfortunate. I have a lot of Palestinian friends, some great doctors in St. Louis. One saved my life, folks, a long time ago. They're just wonderful, heartwarming people, but it's a mess there. So I understand your empathy, Carlos, for that. I think the biggest problem between Israel and the Palestinians is Hamas and Hezbollah. Maybe we should carve a piece out of Iraq or someplace for them. Who knows? Okay, let's go next to Amy in Lexington, Kentucky. Welcome to the program. Hello, Amy.
Hi, George. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I am very well, thank you. I have a random UFO story, and I wanted to give a shout-out to you and let our fans know that you're incredibly awesome, because I was sick. Well, I hurt my back this past weekend, and my friend Tim went to the Cincinnati show that I couldn't go to, and I was so bummed.
You're
out.
The one we called.
I was the one you called, and I thought that was so super cool and kind of you. It made my entire day so much happier.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And thank you for the book also.
Sure.
Just started reading it. It looks very good. Thank you.
Oh, that's great.
The short story I have for the UFO thingamajigger, I went and lived in the Mojave Desert for several years, and I lived at Palisades Ranch, was like about a mile and a half, 2 miles from Air Lockheed, which is an kind of Air Force base, underground stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to watch all the aircraft going above our heads between 1 and 4 in the morning. Several nights we saw just amazing, amazing stuff, but we knew it was the government. One night I was outside and it was about 2:30 in the morning, and no joke, there went something above my head. You couldn't hear it. And this is why I'm inquiring on this, whether if it was a UFO or not.
What was it, triangular shaped?
No, those were all over at night, the triangular ones. They went everywhere throughout the sky, like in seconds. No, this was as large as, no joke, a football field or larger. My head was directly looking up at the sky.
And what shape was it? Was it round?
It was rectangular, almost rectangular, like an ovalish rectangular shape. I don't know what kind of oblong.
Amy, some people think that it's ours. But that's big. Man, that is 300 feet up there and it flies. If it's ours, it's anti-gravity to be sure, but it also could be extraterrestrial. That's why we call them UFOs. They're unidentified. We're at the break. We'll be back with more.